Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, I was looking at the news this morning, and it just feels like we are drowning in AI hype.
Oh, it's everywhere.
But if you actually strip away all the marketing, what are we really looking at? I mean, usually it's a chatbot. It's something that writes a poem, or it summarizes a meeting, or maybe it generates an image of a cat in space.
It's the generative. In generative AI, it creates content. And don't get me wrong, that's useful.
It is useful,
But
but
it's also soft.
soft is the perfect word, because when you talk to people who actually run businesses, you know, CTOs, logistics managers, people with really serious operational headaches, they don't need a poem.
No.
They need to move a shipping container from Shanghai to Rotterdam without losing the paperwork. They need to integrate two massive ancient software systems that just hate each other.
Exactly. They need action. They need execution. And that's the massive gap in the market right now. How do we stop the AI from just talking about work and get it to actually do the work
And do it reliably.
reliably without hallucinating some million-dollar error?
That is the billion-dollar question. And that's why I am so excited about the stack of research we have today. We're looking at the work of Pavani Shankar. Now, this isn't just another AI influencer. This is an engineer who has been in the trenches, moving from on-device machine learning at Samsung to building what are, well, essentially AI compilers for enterprise workflows.
It's a fascinating trajectory. What we're looking at here is the evolution from, say, chatbot to agent, and specifically an agent that you can trust with the keys to the kingdom.
Okay, so let's start with the absolute headline from the source material. This just blew my mind. We're looking at a system Shankar worked on called Loft.
Right.
They
Loft.
did an internal evaluation on an enterprise integration task. And usually, for a human team of engineers, this task takes about 4 weeks. You know, coding, testing, arguing about APIs.
A month of billable hours.
Right. A month. Loft did it in under half a day.
That is just a staggering metric. We're not talking about a 10% efficiency gain. We're
No.
talking about compressing a month into an afternoon.
So the mission for this deep dive is to figure out how. How is that technically possible? Because it sounds like magic, but looking at these notes, it's actually just incredibly rigorous engineering.
It is. It's all about treating the language model not as the brain that does everything, but as a component in a larger, much stricter machine.
So let's unpack Loft. The notes describe it as a domain-specific workflow synthesis system. Synthesis is an interesting word there. It's not generation.
No, and that distinction is vital. Generation is probabilistic. You ask ChatGPT to write code, and it guesses the next likely token. It might work, it might not.
Great. It's a good guess.
Synthesis, in this context, is closer to a compiler in computer science. It takes a high-level intent like, I need to sync these invoice records, and translates it into a rigid executable structure.
The sources say it converts natural language into a deterministic, executable, DAG-based workflow. Okay, we have to pause there.
Yeah.
DAG, directed acyclic graph. Why is that the secret sauce? Why not just let the AI write a Python script and, you know, run it?
Because Python scripts written by AI are dangerous in an enterprise environment. I mean, they can get stuck in infinite loops.
Oh, yeah.
They can try to access variables that don't exist. They can hang the server. A DAG, a directed acyclic graph, is basically a flowchart that only moves forward.
It has a start and an end.
Exactly. It's a graph
Yeah.
where you can go from A to B to C, but you can never loop back from C to A infinitely. It prevents cycles.
Okay.
By forcing the AI to output a DAG, Shankar is imposing this mathematical constraint. It ensures that the workflow will eventually finish. It makes the system deterministic.
So instead of the AI just riffing on the code, it's building a structure that we can actually verify before we even run it.
Precisely. You can look at the graph and say, wait, this step creates a deadlock, and you catch it. You can't do that easily with raw generated code.
This brings us to the architecture behind Loft. The research mentions a planner executor pattern. This seems to be the emerging standard for these autonomous agents.
It is, and for good reason. I mean, think about how you solve a complex problem. You don't just start typing, you plan first. The planner in this architecture is like the architect. It takes your messy, vague request and breaks it down into a logical sequence of steps. It creates an intermediate representation.
So the planner doesn't touch the live data, it just thinks.
Right. It effectively says, to do this integration, I need to. Step one, authenticate. Step two, fetch data. Step three, transform data. Then it hands that plan to the executor.
And the executor is the builder. It does the work.
Yes. The executor is the component that actually has the tools. It knows how to make the API call. It knows how to run the specific function. By separating them, you reduce confusion.
One thinks, one does.
The planner focuses on logic. The executor focuses on mechanics.
And the notes mention they're using LangGraph to orchestrate this?
Yes. LangGraph is a framework specifically designed for this. It manages the state of the application, so it keeps track of where the agent is in the plan. But the really clever bit, and this is where Shankar's work really shines, is how they handle memory. The notes highlight vector retrieval using Qdrent.
And this addresses the hallucination problem.
It addresses the amnesia problem, really. LLMs have very short memories. If you're doing a complex integration that takes, say, 200 steps, the model will forget what it did at step one by the time it gets to step 50.
Which is a disaster if step 50 depends on step one.
Exactly. So by integrating Qdrent, which is a vector database, they give the system a long-term memory. It's like an external hard drive. The system can retrieve relevant context documentation, previous errors, specific user IDs whenever it needs them. It grounds the AI in reality.
So what happens if things go wrong? Because in the real world, you know, APIs fail, servers go down.
That is where adaptive replanning comes in. This is the killer feature. If the executor tries step three and gets a 404 error, a standard script would just crash.
Game over. Call the engineer.
Right. But Loft doesn't crash. It feeds that error back to the planner. The planner looks at it and says, okay, that path is blocked. Let me consult my memory. I can try this alternative endpoint instead. And it rewrites the rest of the plan on the fly.
Wow. That's the difference between automation and autonomy. Automation just follows a track.
Autonomy builds the track as it goes. And that is how you get from 4 weeks of human trial and error to 4 hours of autonomous synthesis. The human isn't fixing every little bug. The system is fixing itself.
It's incredibly impressive. But looking at the broader scope of Shankar's work in these files, Loft didn't just appear out of thin air. It feels like the solution to a problem he must have encountered earlier in his career.
You're looking at the supply chain section.
I am. Before the whole compiler concept, the sources show he was working on conversational AI specifically for supply chain management. And let's be honest, if there is anything messier than software integration, it's a global supply chain.
It is the final boss of messy data. I mean, you have inventory in transit, customs delays, weather events, 10 different databases from 3 different decades. It is chaos.
And the problem was, traditional chatbots are terrible at this. If a manager asks, where is my shipment?
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have the AI say, I feel like it's in Rotterdam, just because Rotterdam is a word often associated with ships.
That's the generative trap. In a creative context, making things up is a feature. In a supply chain context, it's a fireable offense.
So how did they solve it? The notes mention a tool-augmented architecture.
This was the precursor to the planner executor model we were just talking about. The idea was to stop the LLM from trying to answer the question directly. Instead, its only job was to translate the natural language into a tool call.
So if I say, show me all delayed shipments from China, the AI isn't looking for the answer itself. It's writing a SQL query.
Or a set of structured filters for a database.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that people really underestimate. Getting an LLM to reliably write SQL is incredibly hard.
Why? I mean, it's just code. LLMs are good at code.
They're good at generic code. They're bad at your code. They might hallucinate a table name.
Oh.
Or they might assume your column is called price when it's actually called cost V2 final.
Ah, the classic schema problem.
Exactly. The source notes mention they had to do heavy prompt optimization and evaluation. They essentially had to teach the model the specific grammar of their internal databases. And they built rigorous test suites. Shankar seems obsessed with evaluation rigor. He never just trusts the model to get it right.
I noticed another detail in the engineering notes for that supply chain project, streaming inference. Now, usually I think of streaming as just a UI thing, you know, the text appearing letter by letter so you aren't staring at a blank screen.
Mm-hmm.
But the notes list it as a critical engineering priority. Why?
It is a UI thing,
yeah.
But in an enterprise tool, UI is trust. If you ask a complex analytical question like, calculate the risk exposure of the Red Sea route.
Yeah.
That computation might take 20 seconds.
Which is an eternity of software time.
It is. And if the screen just sits there blank for 20 seconds, the user assumes it broke. They hit refresh. They get frustrated.
Yeah.
Streaming inference allows the system to show its work. You could say, I'm querying the database. Okay, found 50 records, now analyzing risks.
It buys you patience.
It buys trust.
Yeah.
It shows the user that the brain is working. And then there's the AI gateway routing mentioned in the sources.
That sounds like plumbing.
It's unsexy industrial plumbing.
Yeah.
but it's crucial for cost. You don't need GPT-4 to say hello. You don't need a massive reasoning model for simple tasks. Gateway Routing analyzes the complexity of the request and sends it to the cheapest, fastest model that can handle it.
So it's optimizing the economics of the AI, not just the performance.
Exactly. And that's what turns a cool demo into a viable product.
But, and there's always a but, all of this reasoning, all of this SQL generation, it relies on one thing, data. And in the supply chain world, data is usually trapped in the worst possible format.
The dreaded PDF.
The PDF. The scanned invoice. The bill of lading that looks like it was faxed 3 times. This brings us to the third pillar of Shankar's work, document intelligence.
This is a massive bottleneck for companies. You have all this truth about what you bought and sold, but it's locked in an image. Traditionally, you'd use OCR, optical character recognition.
Which just looks at shapes and turns them into letters.
Right. And OCR is dumb. It sees a string of numbers and gives you a string of numbers. It doesn't know if that number is the date, the price, or the container ID. It just strips away the context.
The notes say Shankar championed an AI-native extraction strategy. How is that different from OCR?
Well, it's multimodal. It looks at the document visually, like a human does. It sees the layout. It sees that total price is usually at the bottom right, in bold. It uses that spatial context to understand the meaning of the text, not just the characters.
So it extracts structured entities. It's turning a messy scan into a clean spreadsheet row.
Yes. But even then, Shankar didn't trust it fully. The source emphasizes a human-in-the-loop validation system.
This goes back to that reliability theme again.
Yeah.
Why do we need the human if the AI is native and so smart?
Because of the cost of error. I mean, if you misread a single digit on a bill of lading, you might send a container of hazardous chemicals to a food processing plant.
Oh, wow.
Or you might transfer $10 million instead of $1 million. The stakes are just too high.
Too high for probabilistic guessing.
Exactly. So the system extracts the data, but it flags anything it's unsure about, you know, a low confidence score, and it presents it to a human. The human corrects it. And this is the beautiful part. That correction is fed back into the system.
So the mistake actually makes the system smarter for next time.
It's a feedback loop. It's an autoimmune system for data quality.
You know, tracing this path, we have Loft, the compiler, then supply chain, the robust assistant, and document intelligence, the feeder. But if we look at the roots section of the notes, we see that this obsession with structure didn't start with LLMs. It goes all the way back to his time at Samsung R&D.
This is a really cool flashback. We're talking about on-device machine learning.
Which is a totally different world of constraints. No massive server farms, no unlimited GPUs.
No, just the phone in your pocket.
Right. You have limited battery, limited memory, and if you run the processor too hard, the phone gets hot in the user's hand.
Hmm.
The project was unsupervised clustering algorithms for on-device knowledge graph generation. Now, that is a mouthful. Break that down for us. What were they actually trying to do?
Think about your photo gallery. You have thousands of photos. Random sunsets, receipts, selfies, pictures of your dog. It's chaos.
And I am definitely not going through and tagging them all manually.
Exactly. Unsupervised clustering means the phone has to look at that chaos and just figure out the groups on its own. It has to say, hey, these 50 photos have similar pixel patterns and shapes. They probably belong together.
Without me telling it, this is a dog.
Right. It discovers the concept of dog mathematically.
Mm-hmm.
And then the knowledge graph part connects the dots. It says, okay, this cluster looks like dog. And these photos were taken at home, so dog lives at home. It builds this web of relationships.
And it has to do all of that on the device because of privacy.
Privacy and speed. You don't want to upload your entire life to the cloud just to organize your gallery.
The notes mention cluster estimation techniques and graph storage optimization. I imagine optimization is the key word there.
You have to be incredibly efficient. You can't just store a massive database on a phone. They had to figure out how to represent these complex relationships in a tiny amount of memory.
And this wasn't just some research paper. The notes say it resulted in a patent and was deployed in flagship Galaxy devices.
So millions of people likely use this tech without even knowing it.
But if you connect this to the present day, you can really see the thread. Shankar's career is so consistent. Whether it's a pile of random photos on a phone, or a pile of random supply chain documents, or a messy verbal request from a manager.
It's about structure from chaos.
Exactly. He's building the machine that takes the mess of the real world and organizes it into something structured, reliable, and executable.
It really feels like we're at a turning point in the industry. We're moving from the computer makes a guess to the computer makes a plan.
And that shift from prediction to planning is where the real value is. The chatbot era was fun. It was a novelty.
It was.
The agent era is where the work gets done.
It challenges the way we think about software entirely. You know, for the last 40 years, learning a computer meant learning the computer's language. I have to learn where the save icon is. I have to learn the syntax of Excel formulas. I have to bend my brain to fit the machine's logic.
We've been acting as the translators for the machines. We translate our intent into button clicks.
But systems like Loft flip that. If I can just say, connect my sales data to shipping, and the AI compiles the workflow, the computer is finally learning my language.
It removes the friction of usage. The interface just disappears.
Which leads me to a final thought I want to leave with the listener. We've been calling these things tools. But if an AI like Loft can generate a custom workflow for you in half a day, and then you use it, and then maybe you discard it when the task is done.
Where are you going with this?
Are we approaching the end of software as a fixed product?
That's a big leap.
Is it? Think about it. Right now, I buy supply chain software because it has a set of features that I might need.
Yeah.
But in this future, do I need to buy that software? Or do I just have an agent and I tell it, manage my supply chain, and it builds the specific software interfaces it needs just for me in real time?
That is a provocative thought. The app becomes disposable. It becomes just a temporary construct, a transient UI that exists only as long as you have that specific problem.
And once the problem is solved, the software just dissolves.
Software not as a good, but as a utility, like water from the tap. You don't store water in buckets in your house. You just turn the tap on when you need it.
It would certainly explain why Shankar is focusing so hard on reliability and compilers. If the AI is building the software on the fly, it better get it right every single time.
Right.
You can't have disposable software that deletes your database.
It better not hallucinate the delete all button. Well, that is a massive idea to chew on. From the battery constraints of a smartphone to the infinite possibilities of workflow synthesis, Bhavani Shankar's work gives us a glimpse into a future where computers don't just chat, they work.
And they plan.
And they execute. That is all the time we have for this deep dive. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.